it's fun, terrifying, and surreal to be back in that space again, building Fresh Chalk from the ground up. The things that I spend my time doing are completely things that won't scale. Someone might say, why are you doing that work right now? You're in your 40s, you're a CEO, you've raised money. Why are you doing that work? And it's because that's the work that needs to be done.
Hey, it's Adam Schoenfeld. Welcome back to the Built in Seattle podcast, where Seattle's top entrepreneurs, investors, and leaders share their stories and their lessons from behind the scenes. If you like this show, then you'll love my new short weekly email, the Pike Street Journal. Subscribe at psj.email. Each week I send some bonus nuggets from these interviews, stuff I get when the recorder's off, and some more insider takes on Seattle people and companies. That's psj.email. On this episode, I talked with Liz Pierce, who's the CEO and co-founder at Fresh Chalk. That's freshchalk.com if you want to check them out. As a consumer, I love the service that they're building. We talked about the idea for Fresh Chalk and how they got the inspiration. We then went into Liz's leadership philosophy. I learned a ton from talking to her about what it means to be a connector, why she avoids comparing herself with others in the process of company building, and we went into some of the deep conversations she had with her co-founders. I hope you enjoy the conversation with Liz. I'm here with the one, the only, Liz Pierce. Hey, Liz, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Adam.
So it's really good to talk with you. I think we probably first crossed paths maybe 10 years ago.
Yeah, one startup generation ago.
One of our first interactions, we were on some panel and we had this argument about discounting, and you were very pro discounting and I was very anti discounting. And as my sales team grew after that, I totally adopted your point of view.
You did?
Yeah, I totally changed.
That makes me feel so happy.
I had forgotten about that panel,
but it now is flooding back to my memory.
So I'm really excited because now you've made this transition into B2C and you're doing something really cool with Fresh Chalk. I'd love to just get the quick high level on like what is Fresh Chalk and where are you as a business for people who don't know?
Fresh Chalk is a site where you connect with friends and you share your recommendations for the best local businesses and pros that you use with the people that you know. And they share their network of trusted pros with you. And you can think of it as kind of a very filter or personalized version of Yelp, where the goal, the ultimate goal, is for you to be able to go to Fresh Chalk, type in what you need, and see right away 5 great recommendations from people that you actually know and trust. And none of the reviews and recommendations from strangers who you really have no context for why they're making the recommendation or whether you have the same set of values when it comes to hiring people. And we all do this in the very low-tech way right now of like, okay, maybe I'll try to remember who remodeled their basement last year and text them. But if you could just have it in your hand and still have that same feeling of, wow, this comes from someone I know. I have a connection already when I call this person. That's what we would love to give everyone.
Love it. And how far are you in the journey in terms of, you know, funding, employees, stage, however you like to describe it?
Well, we are in that lovely kind of early stage where we haven't really done anything massively wrong yet. It's super early days. What we're trying to build is unique and hard in certain ways that we know will take us a while to crack. And I think we're trying to really be patient, focus on our customers, focus on building a great product, and build the business the right way. And that is, you know, made a lot easier by the fact that we've just raised a seed round at the end of last year. So we have kind of our core team in place. We're mostly engineers and some folks on the go-to-market side. And we're having a great time figuring out what solution the market needs to this product and trying to bring that to Seattle initially.
And tell me about the seed round. Like, you know, how much was it? Who's involved in that? How did that come together?
That happened at the end of last year, and we raised just over $2 million, and we had 3 institutional investors as part of that. One that took about half of the round, and then 2 other ones with some, you know, kind of modest sized investments, and then also a number of angels in the Seattle area and outside of Seattle that are interested in being part of what we're trying to build at Fresh Talk.
I know like you and your co-founders have been entrepreneurs, been in this community for a while, but doing different kinds of things. So how did you guys come together around this idea, and what was the like inspiration or the spark that led to the idea for Fresh Chalk?
So my co-founders, I have three lovely, talented co-founders, and the three of them have worked together in various combinations over the years. So Adam Dopphalt and Patrick O'Donnell built Urban Spoon, along with some other folks who are still busy building companies in Seattle. And then Adam and Nathan were co-founders of a company called Dwellable. Both of those companies were sold, but I guess they just could not get enough of working with each other. So they were kicking around ideas, and Fresh Talk really came, the inspiration for it was from the experience of the team, the Dwellable team, when they relocated to Austin as part of their acquisition. And multiple people picked up their Seattle lives, their families, their significant others, their kids. They packed up, they moved to Austin. And when they got down there, it was just starting over. You don't know a lot of people, you don't know who to call. And luckily, Adam is what we refer to internally as a maximizer. He just is compelled to research every decision he makes when it comes to hiring someone or building something or buying a product. And he put together the master spreadsheet of who to call in Austin for plumbing, for painting, for landscaping, for pool maintenance, whatever it is. Adam had the list, and people wanted the list really badly. The other people who had moved there, people that he, you know, became coworkers with at HomeAway, everybody wanted the list, and he was constantly updating it and refreshing it and sending it out. And that was really the genesis of Fresh Talk, this idea that a lot of people have a list and a lot of their friends want to get their hands on the list, and Fresh Talk is a way that we can enable that.
Are you the kind of person that has a list too? Are you a maximizer, or do you fit into that equation somewhere else?
I don't consider myself a maximizer. No, I am more a satisficer. That's the other end of the spectrum. You know, I am very satisfied to make a decision that one of my maximizer friends has pointed me towards. So I consider myself more of a connector, and that is also a really important part of Fresh Chalk and what we're trying to build. But if I know someone who knows someone, then I'm good. And it's great to have a friend like Adam, and there's a number of other maximizers on the site who kind of are the cornerstone of their communities in terms of really knowing who to call. And if we can connect you as a Fresh Talk member, if you're a satisficer like me, you just need to have a few maximizer friends and you're in pretty good shape.
Can you talk more about what it means to be a connector? And this is something I think I admire about you and the way you operate, and that I don't think I'm good at. So maybe you can teach me a little bit about what it means to be a connector.
Well, it has to start with genuinely liking people and being interested in people and curious about people and wanting to hear their stories and finding ways to relate to them on some level with some experience or with some shared idea. And I think that's just how I'm wired. My perfect day is like my hands don't touch my keyboard. Like I could just go from talking to people to talking to people to talking to people all day long and be perfectly happy. And then the real endorphin hit, I think, comes from when you can think of two people in your network who could benefit from knowing each other and make that connection. And even if, like, you know, that's it for you, they go off and into the sunset and do something great, you feel like you've been able to bring part of, you know, yourself to, you know, and create value for someone else. And that is really exciting for me. And I think it's part of what I love about working at Fresh Talk is just see either facilitating that myself or seeing that happen between other people on the site gives a whole set of energy to what we're building and why I want to work on it and why I want to make it succeed.
That's awesome. Like if you have that wiring and then your business is actually doing that at scale, that must be, you're getting those endorphin hits all day.
I know. I mean, the littlest thing will like throw me into fits of like cheering and running around the office, jumping up and down. Because every time you see one of those connections happen, you're like, this could work on a big scale. like we could actually do this for entire, you know, metro areas and for entire people. You know, people could just come onto the site and within seconds have a connection through someone that they know and get back to the business of life. So I hope that. We can do that.
How did you discover that you were wired as a connector and that that was your wiring? Was that always obvious to you, or how did you come to that realization and sort of the ability to articulate that?
I'm trying to like think back to a moment of realization where I saw the connection between being good at working with people and being effective in moving a business forward. And that might've been my experience at Google when Google was a very young company. And I was basically the traffic manager for the entire marketing organization. And so I had giant spreadsheets with, I think, about 200 projects on a total that I was responsible for managing. And each one had a client, and each one had a team of resources working to get that project shipped. And all day, it was you're like an expediter in the kitchen. I mean, you're talking to the client, you're talking to the service provider, you're lining up which things are happening when. And without having the trust and almost even the shorthand to talk to the people in that client base or in that group of service providers, you can't get your work done. So like you really have to be able to almost have like an unspoken language with people that become part of your core team. And that is also about connection. And if you have that, you can get a lot done. And if you don't have that, you're going to struggle. And so that was probably the first kind of moment that I was like, oh, okay, this is something I can do.
So you were feeling it like some giving some energy from that part of it.
Definitely. When you can pick up the phone and you can, you know, convince someone of the merit of working on your project first and why it needs to get done and how it's going to help the business. And they're like, okay, then you're like, okay, we're in business. We're cooking with gas now. And you have to do that all day.
I'm curious with this being part of your wiring, being a connector, and you said that your ideal day is that you don't ever sit down to the keyboard. How do you think about measuring that or checking in with that? Like if you're being successful in, you know, how you spend your time. That may sound like a funny question from an Android like me who like needs things in a spreadsheet, but I am very curious as to how you think about it. Like what's the mental model for, am I, you know, doing my best work?
Well, I think it's been different at different stages of my career. I will say as a CEO, you know, by the time you're leading a team and running an organization, the people on the team are the ones who are really making the business go. And you're kind of playing the role of a conductor where, you know, your job is to make sure everyone's on the same page and working on the same things and aligned in the strategy and values. And if you can accomplish that across a group of people, then, you know, that is your reward for having those relationships and being able to bring people together. And you see it in the performance of the business overall, not in a single metric.
So outside of the performance and the results of the business, like what do you feel and see that shows that you're being effective as that conductor and connector?
Yeah, I think the first place you see either your success or failure in doing that is with the team. If people are unhappy, not motivated, not energetic, not performing, it very likely goes back to something that you're not doing or could be doing better as a leader. Sometimes it's just not a great fit, but oftentimes it might mean that you have gotten distracted from that core job of keeping everyone together and on the same page and excited about the business. And that's one of those roles where it is very hard to like list out the tasks associated with that kind of work. And I think if you're, you know, if you're kind of a linear thinker, there's plenty of work as a CEO that is like that. Like look at the financial operations of the business. You have to do these things. Look at a hiring process. You have to do these things. Look at go to market. You have to do these things. But the ambiguous, amorphous responsibility of developing and sustaining a culture in a company that can grow to become a big, important company is something that's very hard to like put a task list next to. And my background is in project management. I love nothing more than a task list. So it is challenging, I think, for everybody in that role.
What are the methods or things you've done to be able to check in when the culture or when the relationships are in a lull? And then how do you kind of bring them back up and use that superpower?
I think it requires having built a foundation with people as individuals and establishing trust. And that requires, I think, being willing to be vulnerable yourself with people on your team. And if you do that, when you go to them when times are hard or things aren't going well, you have a fighting chance of getting to resolution and getting to the root of the problem and trying to work together towards the right outcome, whether that is just making things different, you know, and continuing to work together, or making a decision to part ways. So the work to be successful there, I think, starts at the very beginning. You know, when you are first hiring someone or bringing them on the team or onboarding them, that's when you really have to start that.
How does that show up with you and your co-founders? Is there some dynamics at play there where you guys help bring each other up? Or I'm curious how that looks in the very early stage when you're just forming as a team.
Yeah, it was funny because they have been in Seattle building companies together for decades now, as have I, and we never had met each other before we were introduced right when we kind of came together for Fresh Chalk. And we had tons of mutual friends and connections and ironically had just never met. So they already had this dynamic between the three of them that I like was inserting myself into. And it worked because they were self-aware about what they brought to the business and what they needed in a CEO and a fourth co-founder. And we had some of those really honest conversations when we were deciding to get into the business together. And that, again, was the foundation of how we worked together. I will say that one of the other co-founders is who we call the decider. I think that was George W. who came up with the decider as a concept. But if we can't get to consensus on an important decision, we kind of leave it to Nathan. And he's just the one of us who is the most thoughtful, the most right. He makes the most right decisions, and we all trust him implicitly. Luckily, we don't get to that point very often, but we have agreed that if we have a hard time with a decision, we're going to let Nathan make it.
Is that something that you had to, you know, write down early on or establish? Was that one of those hard conversations?
No.
Or did that kind of happen organically? Like, oh,
it happened organically. We haven't had to use it very often, but we do kind of, even when it's not, you know, badge on the table moment, like we're never going to get through this decision, we still be like, Nathan, what do you think about this? And that's one of his unique things that he contributes to the company. And it's nice to have that as a group of four co-founders to kind of fall back on.
Love it. What were some of the hard conversations or honest conversations that happened to build the foundation that you're talking about of trust? Are there any that you could go into, like a little behind the scenes view on what one of those was or what it looked like?
Yeah, we talked about what we're terrible at, what we're afraid of, what kind of company we wanted to build, what kind of product we wanted to build. Those ones where you're really admitting your weakness in a very honest way. First to yourself, of course, because that's the first step, but then to people that you really don't know deeply yet, I think was an important step for us to go through and in making the decision.
Had they already had those, what are you afraid of? You know, what are you bad at kind of hard conversations, and you had to kind of come add your perspective in, or did they rehash it as
a- They rehashed it. Okay. Yeah, they caught me up. But I think the dominant theme was that none of them really wanted to do the type of work that a CEO has to spend their time doing. And they really enjoy their engineering work and their focus on the product. And it was very clear how we would divide up responsibilities. So that made things easier.
One of the other things you talked about when we were chatting before was that you don't compare your path to others. And I really like that as a headline. It's a great tweet. Can you explain more what that means and why that's important?
Oh, how far back do you want to go to why this matters to me? Actually, maybe it would be easier to start from kind of how this idea developed for me. So growing up, I lived in a suburb of Indianapolis that was a wealthy, affluent suburb. And my parents had relocated there from somewhere else for my dad's job. And we were very much on kind of the low end of the affluent scale in my town. We had food on the table. We never went hungry. We went to the doctor. My parents had educations. Like, by any standard, we were fine. But everyone around me was living kind of a different life. And so as a middle schooler and teenager, you just become very aware of what you have and how people judge you and what other people have and how they're judged. And I think both of my parents found ways to remind me throughout that experience of what we have that is not visible in terms of the car your parents drive or the clothes you wear or the house you live in. So I had to kind of reconcile those things as I was growing up. And I find now, thinking about my career and thinking about building businesses and being part of kind of the startup VC world that is known to be kind of very competitive. Everyone is very driven. There are very high expectations. There's a lot of corresponding mental health problems and everything else that comes along with it. But it would be really easy to get caught up in this mental loop of comparing how you're doing, what you're doing, and what you're achieving to everyone else around you. And it doesn't work. Like, you can never win that game. And I think the way out of that is to just turn your focus inward and focus on, how do you improve? How do you have your own personal best or the company's personal best? How do you keep moving that needle forward in terms of what you've accomplished and what your impact is and how the business is progressing or how you as an individual are progressing? And there's a saying in Eastern religions that comparison is the root of all unhappiness. And I think that is very, very true in company building and an entrepreneurship. And if you can put the blinders on a little bit to what's happening outside of your four walls, then you can achieve because you just keep going. You just keep trying to get up the next day and do it better and add more value and create something and build something. But if you paid attention to how much money your competitors have and who just hired like a great new hire and what everyone else is getting in terms of media coverage, you might get distracted and dismayed and feel like it's not worth continuing the journey. And so much of it is just about continuing, just keep going. So that's where that comes from.
I like that a lot. And you described it in a way that I hadn't heard before, but that focus on, you know, waking up and doing it a little bit better. I'm curious for you personally, and then maybe I'll ask about the company culture, but for you personally, how do you build that into the way you work? And maybe at this point, it's a principle that's been core for you for a long time, but are there any habits or methods? Like, do you turn off the news feed or Twitter? I don't know like what the possible traps are that people might fall into or that you've figured out ways to overcome, but I'm curious how you actually tactically avoid the traps.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it does come back to that kind of being very task-oriented and wanting to accomplish a lot with the time that we have. I mean, I get up every morning and I make myself, like, here's mine from today. No one can see this, but I'm showing you, Adam, my to-do list for today. And I fill it up with all the things I want to get done or at least make progress on. And if I just work that list and I'm really like just trying to move all of these things forward, I don't have time to like just screw around on Twitter or go look at my competitors' websites and their Crunchbase profiles and everything else, because I don't have time. I have to do all of these things. So it's a bit of a forcing function. I think I learned this at Liquid Planner, where I spent 11 years, and you know, we went from nothing to an 8-figure revenue business. And it was literally by putting one foot in front of the other and not giving up. And we watched companies that tried to come up in our space, you know, just wither on the vine and die, while we were just like one foot in front of the other, make it better, get that next customer, build that next feature that people need every day, do the work. And it's fun, terrifying, and surreal to be back in that space again, building Fresh Talk from the ground up. The things that I spend my time doing, like, are completely things that won't scale. Someone might say, why are you doing that work right now? You're in your 40s, you're a CEO, you've raised money. Why are you doing that work? And it's because that's the work that needs to be done. And you can never go into something with the idea that, like, I'm too good to do that work, or someone else will do it. You got to get your fingernails dirty. And if you can keep that mindset, you don't have the entitlement that comes with leaving it to someone else.
It resonates for me for sure, as, you know, being focused on the process and what you're doing. And like you said, do the work. I'm curious how you build that into your culture and do that as a team and do that as your company grows, to make that mindset something that others hold as they operate. How do you translate that to a company?
It probably goes back to, you know, I think maybe there's some parallels between how I do that in a company now as a leader with how I did that at Google in my other example as a project manager, where you kind of got to get all the plates spinning at the same time, right? That's one of your jobs, is to know everybody, their strengths, what they're interested in working on, what they can work on, what needs to be done. And your job is to kind of go out there, make eye contact and being like, okay, what are you working on to move this business? What do you care about? How will it make a difference? What's the first milestone? When are we going to see it? Okay, I'll check back in with you tomorrow. Like, you can set a cadence of check-ins and connection points around something you're trying to get off the ground, or a new initiative or a project, that helps imbue that entire process with energy. If you're saying, okay, we're going to talk about it today and I'll see you in 2 weeks, bring me something baked, you're going to have a completely different outcome than if you say, okay, go find this piece of data, think about what it means, and we'll come back tomorrow and talk about it. So setting that expectation that there's going to be kind of daily progress made, even if it's incremental, can be really helpful in, you know, for each contributor on the team, making sure they're all moving quickly and getting stuff done. And it's when you just go off for a month and forget about someone that you stagnate and you stall. So again, it goes back to having those relationships, making a habit of checking in, talking to everybody every day, acknowledging and recognizing the work that people do, and helping to troubleshoot and remove blockages where people are stuck.
Yeah, it sounds simple, but I can see how it's powerful, and people not then getting into the trap of comparison and kind of the downside that you were talking about there. I love that. So I want to go to the rapid fire round. So the supersonic six. Number one, what other people or companies in Seattle do you admire the most?
Basically, look at your podcast lineup and you're getting most of them. I've been a longtime fan of Glenn Kelman at Redfin and Manny Medina at Outreach, and I will add to the list. I'm not sure if you've had her yet, but Leslie Feinzig from the Female Founders Alliance. I'm always watching and trying to learn from what she does.
Perfect. Well, shout out to those people. I'll have to reach out to Leslie and get her on the podcast.
Oh, you need to, for sure.
Number two, what's one thing Seattle needs to improve as a startup hub?
I think we definitely need more capital for early stage companies, but I will narrow that more to say we need more investment in startups with diverse founding teams. We need to give different perspectives a chance to shine in those roles and to put some of the venture money to use.
Number three, what book or books do you come back to the most?
I would say the genre of books that I come back to the most are like life philosophy books, like Wherever You Go, There You Are, or another favorite is The Obstacle is the Way. These books that kind of give you a framework for how to make decisions and think about challenges. Those are my go-to.
Perfect. What do you know today that you wish you'd known 10 years ago?
I think really having the knowledge and the confidence that I deserve to be here at the table, to be part of the startup ecosystem and, you know, just standing alongside other people who are building companies. I don't know that I really fully felt that 10 years ago. And I wish I had, you know, had that confidence back then and put it to use.
Love it. What's a surprising learning that you've had in the last year?
How quickly the ground can shift under your feet. I mean, I think none of us saw coming the world that we're living in now.
Do you like that we were able to go this whole conversation without talking about the pandemic?
I was wondering if we would stub our toes on the pandemic somewhere along the way.
All right. Last question is, what can this community do to help you? Is there anything you want listeners to bring their attention to or anything you need help with that people can do?
Yeah. I mean, I need everybody to join Fresh Chalk, to recommend your favorite local businesses, and to connect with each other.
Perfect. And what's the best way to do that? It's just
freshchalk.com.
Freshchalk.com.
Yep.
Awesome. And what?
You can follow Adam.
Yeah, I'm on there. I was actually just on there last week looking at some stuff. So I'll give you some user feedback soon.
Please do.
Where can people follow you or find you? What's the best way to stay in touch or follow along with what you're doing?
Probably on Twitter, LizPRC.
Thank you so much, Liz.
Thanks, Adam. Thanks for having me.
Is it on? I think it's on. Hey, it's Adam again. Quick note before you go. Thanks so much for listening. I hope you're enjoying the show as much as I am enjoying making it. If you do like it, please leave a rating or a review. That would help other people find it in Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. And if you have any feedback, send me an email, adamseattlepodcast@gmail.com. No underscores, no periods, just adamseattlepodcast@gmail.com.